Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Steve. He is
Dr. Van Beek.
Oh, we're back to Dr. Van Beek. Last time we were Larry Van Beek, Dr. Van Beek. We're good. We're getting there, right? Hey. Folks, welcome back. Hey, we're here. We're happy to see you. Oh, actually, we can't see you. You can't see us. Actually, we've got faces for radio. That's what they say, right? So, anyway.
I'm going to get a picture for the podcast that we can
on it. That's right. That's right. Well, so we can see Larry's lovely face. Nobody wants to see mine, but you know, maybe we'll put it in the bottom corner. You know, we'll make it a contest. If you can find Steve's face in this big icon, you know, we'll send you a free copy of the podcast.
Yeah, where is
That's right. That's right. Hang on. The podcast is free. Folks, we're going to talk about chapter 10 of Revelation this week. It's the angel and a little scroll, which is, not like the Littlest Hobo show like you used to watch. That's something far different. But this is much more of a majestic vision that John sees here. So, Larry, is there anything that we should do to introduce this passage, or should we just jump right in?
No, I think this is a really difficult passage, Steve. You know, everything in Revelation is difficult. but this can be troubling, mainly because of just what these thunders are all about. And what we don't know bothers us as much as what we do, which I imagine you can say about any passage in Revelation. But but we're really gonna emphasize that on this one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Thanks. You know, folks. Once again, we're gonna read out of the ESV, hoping that we're not gonna get sued for any infringement. So starting at chapter 10. Can't wait to read some very difficult Greek names out loud today. Is there any? Oh, good. I'm safe. There is none.
No, there's nothing in this one, Steve. You should be good.
Yes. That's right. Who doesn't want to hear me stumble over lots of terms? But anyway, we're going to start at verse 1 of chapter 10, and I'll read the first couple of verses here, and then we'll go from there. Then I saw another mighty angel coming down from heaven, wrapped in a cloud, with a rainbow over his head. And his face was like the sun, and his legs like pillars of fire. And he had a little scroll open in his hand. And he set his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land. And he called out with a loud voice like a lion roaring. So not just the average entrance here. You just didn't kind of stroll into the room. This is a pretty majestic entrance again.
Huge entrance. Very much like the angel that brought the scroll in chapter 5, verse 2, right?
Right.
He was a mighty angel, he was a mighty angel. I'll stay with he. It could be he or she or you know, they're a totally different type of creation, so they're not necessarily he or she anyway. But anyway, this mighty angel comes down out of heaven, very much like the last one. What's really surprising here is you get mighty angels coming down carrying these books. And then when he does huge things like casting Satan into the pit, he does it just with a little angel, right? Just an ordinary everyday angel. But for this, he uses the mighty angel. So this one comes down out of heaven. He's wrapped in a cloud and he has a rainbow over his head. His face is like the sun and his legs are like pillars of fire. And any of the commentaries I read on this, they basically just say, he's wrapped in a cloud and he's got a rainbow. These are images from the Old Testament wrapped in the cloud. That's a heavenly vision of what the angel looks like. A rainbow over his head. That's the rainbow comes from the guy in the Old Testament.
You mean Noah? I'll take Noah for 200, please, Alex.
Okay, yeah, Noah. I always want to say Moses for some reason. You know, that comes from Noah in the Old Testament. It would make a tremendous Skittles commercial, I imagine.
Wow.
And some say, here's the oddity, is some say, well, he's wrapped in a cloud and there's a rainbow over his head with his face shining like the sun. They say, you know, that shining face deflecting off the cloud creates this rainbow. Mm. But I don't think that's the point of the passage. I think when he's coming down, the rainbow was a sign of God's mercy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrapped in the cloud is a sign of the presence of God. We just say that because we're not really sure what to do with it. Face like the sun. Moses, when he came off the mountain after he'd seen God, his face was so brilliant that people couldn't look at him. presence of God again, and legs like pillars of fire. For some reason, everybody wants to take that and to the Exodus and talk about the pillars of fire that led the children of Israel out of Egypt. Remember, it was a cloud by day, wrapped in a cloud, pillars of fire by night. Those are the pillars of fire. So you have some, you have quite a bit of Exodus imagery here and a little bit of imagery from Genesis as well. All of this saying, it kind of says God is here and there's mercy in this.
That's an interesting point.
We're just really not sure what to do with this angel, just like we're not sure what to do with these thunders. So so that's kind of where we go. He had a little scroll in his hand. Now this is the word scroll. It's diminutive, and it's even a little more diminutive than the other scroll that was in 5:2, the scroll with the seven seals. The word for this scroll is also talking about just a little scroll. And we think little has more to do with the size of the scroll than the importance of the contents.
Okay.
So he's coming down, he's got a scroll. He puts his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land. And most of the commentators I read, now some will say this shows his power over all of creation, right?
Okay.
It also could point to, I say right a lot these days, don't I, Steve?
Yeah, that's good. It's better than left.
I think because someone said, don't say so now I just picked a different word. So, puts his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land. So that's he's in control of everything. And some say, how huge must this guy be? You know, some look at it, this wrapped in a cloud, is this angel is just massive, reaching up into the clouds, okay? And he's got to be huge to have his foot on the land and foot on the sea. But then, I don't think that's the important part of it, the size of the angel, except that it's a mighty angel. Because I can stand with my foot on the land and my other foot on the
Yeah, you really can.
And it's not impressive at all. So, but in this case, we know that there's the sign of God is here, and that this angel is very impressive, and he has a scroll in his hand. And he calls out in a voice like a lion roaring, and we've heard that before, right? We've heard a voice like thunder, and this time a voice like a lion.
So awe-inspiring, generates fear, all those types of things come to mind right away, eh?
Yeah, if you saw him, I think you'd be scared.
Yeah.
And Dan Betzer, he was an old radio announcer, and he would talk to these angels. And he would say, you know, we look at angels like little cherubs that, you know, shoot arrows to make us love each other and things like that. They're little fat children with diapers on. And he says, but if you ever run into these angels, it's not going to be like that at all.
Yeah.
They can be utterly terrifying.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So do you want me to read down maybe end of 7?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So folks, picking it up at that second sentence in verse 3. When he called out, the seven thunders sounded. And when the seven thunders had sounded, I was about to write. But I heard a voice from heaven saying, seal up what the seven thunders have said, and do not write it down. And the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and on the land raised his right hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created heaven and that is in it. Sorry, it's just for some reason that's made me stumble there. The earth and that is in it, and the sea and that. And what? That's what it is. I can't figure it out. Sorry.
You created heaven. What?
Yeah, I know. It's like, what is going on with me? Yeah. Sorry.
And the sea and what is in it.
Yeah. Sorry. So let's try it again. Who created heaven?
And what is in it? That's a question. So we're doing really
And the earth and what is in it, and the sea and what is in it, that there would be no more delay, but that the days of the trumpet sound, and the days of the trumpet call to be sounded by the seventh angel, the mystery of God would be fulfilled, just as he announced to his servants the prophets. So, I guess one thing that stands out to me, Bud, is, you know, obviously John's about to write something down. And all of a sudden, he hears this voice that says, seal it up. This is not to be exposed like the rest of the things that John saw and actually did write down.
Yeah, and it's critical for us, right? And that's why I said this is so difficult, because there's this idea of mercy coming through with some of the aspects of this angel. The incredible power of the angel is there. And then he actually hears the seven thunders. God shows him the seven thunders and then says, don't write that down, John. And we take that back and we see Paul. And Paul says, remember when he went up, when John went to heaven in chapter 4, I referred back to Paul in Corinthians. Mm. He said, I'll boast of a man who went to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. Mm-hmm. And then he says, and that man saw things in the heavens. He saw unspeakable things. And Paul said, I saw things in heaven that I cannot relate to you. And you don't know whether what he saw was so immense that he couldn't relate, or if you just can't talk about these things when you see them. And in John's case, it's the exact same thing. He hears the thunders. Now in this time, he's going to write down what he sees, and God says no. And so people have different ideas, therefore, of what these thunders are. Some people think this is an aspect of mercy, mainly from the rainbow and the things. This could be an aspect of mercy from God in the midst of all of these things happening on the planet. He's saying there is a merciful thing here. But then why not say it, right? Why not say it? Others say the thunders are so terrible that he just can't write it. You know, there are going to be such horrific things that you can't write them down. But when you read the rest of the trumpets and the bowls, those are pretty horrific things. a third of the sea is going to turn to blood, and a third of the animals in the sea are going to die.
And being stung by scorpions doesn't sound like all that fun either. Yeah, or running, locusts with tails like scorpions.
Yeah, and running and seeking death, right? So so it's hard for us to say that it's going to be more horrific than anything else. Really what it's saying, and some of the commentators will pick up on this, and they'll say what it's saying is that we're not to know everything that's going to happen. God keeps some of this stuff for himself, right? And he'll kind of reveal that as time goes on. In the book of Daniel, in Daniel chapter 12, Daniel gets a bunch of stuff, and it's actually the opposite of this, where Daniel doesn't really understand, and God says, well, just write it down. It's for a future time. And so Daniel writes down some stuff that he's not sure about, and it's for a future time, and some people actually bring that and put it to this time of Revelation, of course. And this is the opposite. John knows what's going to happen, and God says, yeah, don't write that down. But where it does mess us up, and that's what I wanted to point out, is that if we have a linear view of Revelation, so if it goes seven seals, seven trumpets, seven bowls, the end of time.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, you've got to somehow figure in these seven thunders in your 7 years of tribulation. And so there are, when you're trying to lay out, when the people are trying to lay out all of the things that are going to happen in those 7 years, they actually have a chunk that they just don't know.
Right. Yeah, I get you now. I get you.
And so seal up the thunders. Is this the mercy of God that he says seal it up, or is it the mystery of God that he said, that's the reason he says seal it up? Really, we don't know. We just don't know. And, you know, there's so many things that John says that we're uncertain of anyway. So you might as well throw in a whole chunk that's just a mystery to us.
Right. Yep.
And so then the angel whom I saw standing on the land and the sea, he raised his right hand to heaven. I don't know why. Whenever I read that, I have this image of the Avengers and Thor standing with his hammer raised. Probably doesn't help us at all. but that's the image I get. And so this angel is standing with his right hand to heaven. So he's swearing by him who lives forever and ever. And that's, of course, God, right? Mm-hmm. He's swearing by God who created heaven and what is in it, and earth and what is in it, and the sea and what is in it. So John really takes some time here to say, just how much more, how powerful God is. And he says, there's going to be no more delay. So, I'm going to, in the days of the trumpet, called to be sounded by the seventh angel, the mystery of God is going to be fulfilled. Ah, there's a mystery in the seven thunders, right? Yeah. Just as was announced by his servant, the prophets.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, but I was just going to interject. So when he says that there would be no delay, is that that point? Could we go back to that point where the saints are calling for vengeance on their martyrdom or their blood that's been shed? Is this, could that be this, or is it something different?
Well, and he says a couple of times in here, there's going to be no more delay, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, it can, you can fit that into that, or you can just fit it that this is the days, this trumpet's going to sound by the seventh angel, and I'm going to fulfill my mystery. It's all going to come together in about, you know, in another chapter. And don't forget, you're sitting in a room, you're eating supper, you've got a really good reader, he's reading this stuff to you, and you know, you're not a visual generation like we are. We see stuff on TV, so we're visual, but they can handle this the audio, and they can make the images for themselves. And this whole thing so far, you think he's probably been reading for about 20 minutes. So all of the stuff that's been going on in these last 10 chapters has taken him about 20 minutes to read. So the audience is spellbound. And he says, the mystery is going to be fulfilled now. When he gets there, he pronounces the end of time. And then he goes on with more explanation again. The prophets, we could be talking about the book of Exodus. We could be talking about Daniel. We could be talking about Ezekiel. You know, we could be talking about the stuff in Joel. There's apocalyptic stuff all the way through here that he references in Revelation. So God is bringing this whole thing to a wonderful end, and the mystery will be revealed.
That, and I appreciate you bringing that back in again, that this is, you know, this is the war of the worlds, that radio drama for this generation, right? It would have been so spellbounding to hear this story that they completely would have tracked with the reader who was reading with this.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. I forgot about who did war, Orson Welles, right?
That was H.G. Yeah, Orson Welles. Yeah. H.G. Wells, right?
H.G. Wells. Orson Welles was the actor, I guess.
Yes, yes. And who said something about some bread or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
some commercial. That's all I know.
About his sleigh or something. But
yeah, anyway.
but Wells, who did this one about the War of the Worlds. Yeah, when you say that, people believed it was real, right?
Yeah.
And they were spellbound and terrified by the stuff that was happening. They actually had to back off and tell people, oh, no, it's just a show, guys. It's just a show.
Yeah.
And these guys would be, and can you imagine hearing this? But it's not just a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be quite amazing.
Yeah. Okay, and so we'll pick it up at verse 8 now?
Yeah.
All right. Then the voice that I heard from heaven spoke again to me, saying, go and take the scroll that is open in the hand of the angel who is standing on the sea and the land. So I went to the angel and told him to give me the little scroll. And he said to me, take and eat it. It will make your stomach bitter, but in your mouth it will be as sweet as honey. And I took the little scroll from the hand of the angel and ate it. And it was as sweet as honey in my mouth. But when I had eaten it, my stomach was made bitter. As I was told, you must again prophesy about many peoples and nations and languages and kings.
Yeah, so now this is actually straight out of Ezekiel. I can't remember which chapter in Ezekiel it was. Where he says to him, take the scroll and eat it. It'll be sweet like honey in your mouth, and will make your stomach bitter. I should have looked that up beforehand. I apologize for that, Steve. But it is a piece right out of Ezekiel that he takes here, and it's to do with the effects of prophecy, the way that they seem good, but they have that bitter edge to the prophecy. Right. And I took it and I ate it, and it was exactly like that. It was a good word. It was a pleasant word. but it had that kick that prophecy can have. If you're not obeying God, you know, these are the terrible things that are going to happen. So that's kind of what he's saying here with the scroll. So he takes the scroll, he eats it, and that's what it does. Now, of course, he's not sharing this scroll.
Okay.
But now he's going to go back and he's going to prophesy again about the peoples and the nations and the languages and the kings. And he kind of tells you that now I'm going to go back and I'm going to pick this up one more time, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to take it to the end in 11, and then I'm going to pick it up again and talk about it again.
Right. And actually, just to backfill, sorry, because folks, while Larry's talking, sometimes I'll go backfill stuff. So it's Ezekiel 3 that's in.
Oh, okay, thanks. Right from the Ezekiel 3:1?
It's 3:3 is actually that particular verse where he says, "Son of man, eat this scroll that I'm giving you and fill your stomach with it." And so I ate it, and it tasted as sweet as, sorry, I'm trying to get to the whole chapter here, as sweet as honey. In my mouth. So,
but it made my stomach bitter. And then he goes on, and of course the prophecy from Ezekiel comes out of that, right?
And actually
I'm sending you to a people who, you know, to your own people. I normally send people to others, but I'm going to send you to your own people, and they will not listen to you.
You're not being sent to a people of obscure speech and language, strange language, but to the people of Israel.
And now he's going to go back, but now he's going to prophesy to everybody here, right? To the to the people and the nations and the languages and the kings.
And
he's prophesying about them, and he's going to be talking about the suffering that's going to happen in their lives. Which is also to bring them to salvation. We'll throw that back in there.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's important that you emphasize that theme, because that's always there, right?
Yeah. So next time, Steve, we'll get together and we'll start talking about 11. And most people put this together. Most commentators go from this chapter 10 and they go right down to 11:14. And 11 is going to be the two witnesses on the earth.
Okay.
But because there's so much in that section of 11, I just like to do that as a separate piece.
Right. Yes. Cause it's like you said, it's really packed with a lot of symbols. I'm sure a lot of imagery and a lot of things are going on in that we need to kind of ponder and rather than skip over.
Yeah. And we don't know what's going to happen in these thunders anyway. So
the mystery thunder, which sounds like a really scary ride at like Knott's Berry Farm or something like that. Ride the mystery thunder.
For some reason, I was thinking of the Thundercats, and I don't know if you ever remember them.
Yes. Wow. You and I really took two different approaches to this. Well, that's great. Lara, thanks so much for leading us through this. Now, folks, as we approach, for us, we're approaching the end of the year. And that means that we're going to take a little bit of a pause here. You know, we're kind of in the middle of the book. And at least numerically, chapter-wise, we're in the middle of the book. We might not be in the middle of the book in terms of the Revelation itself. But we're going to take a little pause here. So this will be the last podcast you hear for about 3, maybe 4 weeks, somewhere in around that stretch. And then we'll be back and we'll be better than ever. We'll be rested. It's not like we're going to have a Mexican holiday. Well, at least not together. Actually, not even apart. We're not going to have a Mexican holiday. but we'll spend a little time recouping and thinking of some better jokes so we can play. That we can offer during the podcast and things like that. But just so you know, we're going to have, you know, this 3-4 week kind of pause and, you know, catch up with us then. So until next time, we sure enjoyed you coming along on this ride. I hope you gained something from this look into the angel and the little scroll here in chapter 10. And I hope you can forgive me for replacing the word that with what or what with that. Because that was weird. I think I obviously need to go for some sort of medical appointment with that. So, but until next time, from Steve and Larry, thanks so much for joining us. You've listened to the Apocalypse Podcast. We'll see you.
See you soon, everybody.